美国与盟友商讨向乌克兰提供更多重武器。美国务卿布林肯关切中国是否在所罗门群岛设军事基地。马斯克收购推特的意义与争议。大家好，欢迎收看《美国观察》，我是平章。特斯拉首席执行官马斯克成功收购推特，引发热议。我们将在稍后的节目当中一起来探讨这件事情的意义和争议。首先来关注乌克兰局势。美国国防部长奥斯汀4月26日在德国拉姆施泰因空地召集40多国国防官员开会，讨论如何向乌克兰提供更多重武器。根据路透社的报道，美国政府官员本周在谈及乌克兰战局时，说话的重点已经从协助乌克兰自卫转变为帮助乌克兰取胜，从而重创俄罗斯在未来威胁邻国的能力。莫斯科指责北约从事代理人战争，导致引爆核大战的风险。不过乌克兰及其盟友都试图淡化俄方有关核战风险的说法。乌克兰外长库列巴在推特上说，俄罗斯已经丧失了恐吓世界不要支持乌克兰的最后希望。美国国务卿布林肯星期二出席国会参议院外交政策委员会的一场听证会。布林肯说，在俄罗斯入侵乌克兰之后，中国在言辞上支持俄罗斯，这有损中国的声誉。布林肯说，目前美国并未看到中国在军事上对俄罗斯提供援助。这位美国首席外交官计划在未来几个星期内发表国安策略演说，其中将包括对华政策。布林肯也对所罗门群岛最近与中国签署一项协议表示关切。
With regard to the Solomon Islands, yes, we share the concern about this agreement. We sent a very high-level delegation to the Solomons just a few days ago. Our lead China expert at the White House, Kurt Campbell, along with the Assistant Secretary for the region, Dan Crittenbrink,led a delegation to the Solomon Islands. I had previously announced some months ago that we intend to open an embassy there that we're moving forward on. We want to have day-in, day-out presence there. We're moving forward on that. The delegation met with the Prime Minister. He vowed publicly as well as privately that there would be no Chinese military base, no long-term presence, no power projection capability. We will be watching that.Very, very closely in the weeks and months ahead.
美国国务院敦促中国当局立即公布藏人根敦确吉尼玛的下落，并允许他行使自己的人权和基本权利。根敦确吉尼玛年幼时被西藏流亡精神领袖达赖喇嘛选定为第11世班禅喇嘛，之后被中国当局带走，至今下落不明。美国国务院4月25日发表的一份声明说，美国支持藏人有权根据自己的信仰并不受政府干扰地选择和敬重自己的领袖，包括达赖喇嘛和班禅喇嘛。同样在星期一，美国国际宗教自由委员会发布2022年度全球宗教自由状况报告，建议美国政府将包括中国在内的15个国家列为系统性、持续和严重侵犯宗教自由的特别关注国。美国副总统哈里斯办公室星期二说，哈里斯新冠检测呈阳性但无症状。声明表示，由于近期各自有旅行安排，哈里斯副总统没有同拜登总统或第一夫人有过密切接触，他将进行隔离，继续在他的居所工作，并将在测试结果为阴性时返回白宫。今年57岁的哈里斯已经接种了疫苗并打了2剂加强针，最新一次是在4月1日接种的。特斯拉首席执行官伊隆·马斯克星期一同推特达成协议，以$440亿的价格收购了这家全世界影响力最大的社交媒体平台之一。有关这项收购的意义与争议，我们现在来连线加州大学戴维斯分校经济系客座教授、加州发展服务部研究首席廖启宏博士。廖博士，你好。
平章你好。
廖博士，我们知道马斯克其实很早之前就透露过有意要收购推特，那么在4月份的时候也是采取了一系列的这个密集的行动，但是他一直遭到了很多的阻力啊，比如说推特的董事会就不惜动用毒丸计划来阻击马斯克的收购。那么马斯克最终为什么能够收购成功呢？在您看来？
是马斯克向来是毫不隐瞒，表示这个对推特这个社群媒体表达他的爱好和爱慕。他早在2017年就是公开的推特写下 "I love Twitter"， 我喜欢推特。那在差不多两个礼拜前呢，当时马斯克他就很公开的方式表示要来购买推特。那马斯克在一封给推特的主席的公开信里面表示，他收购推特并不是为了盈利，而是看到推特的潜力，就是成为一个全球自由言论的平台。那这个对于社会和民主对话是至为重要的。但是可以说是这个郎有情妹无意啊，这个推特当时相当的却步，董事会甚至这个公开表示已经触发了股东权益计划，也就是所谓的独完计划，也就是这是一个反收购的措施，借由一些股价的差异来稀释这个购买者的股份。不过话音刚落呢，双方在昨天就达成收购协议了。至于这个推特为什么有这样子强烈的这个态度转变，其实说到底还是因为价格为王。这个推特的股价在四月初的时候一股还不到$40，但是目前马斯克所提出的$440亿的价格换算成每一股差不多是$54.2，那这跟四月初相比是35%的涨幅，这个让没有办法让投资人拒绝的价格是主要促成这个收购案的原因。毕竟公司的董事会还是要向股东和投资人负责，让投资人不开心的话，这些董事会可能就下次不用当了，所以这是主要的原因。嗯，
是，这项收购也让推特从一家公开交易的公司转变成一家私人公司。这个转变意味着什么？马斯克个人会对推特有多大的控制力？
是的，推特在昨天表示，他们和马斯克已经进入这个最后收购的最终协议。那详细的内容还有股东权益等等都还没有太多细节。但是可以知道，就像你说的，这个通过之后呢，推特将会从一个公开交易的公司变成私人公司。而马斯克他对于这个推特将会有完全的控制力，基本上他就会形塑推特接下来的样貌。对于推特这家公司来说呢，这个转变是蛮大的，因为这表示他们接下来不需要用把股价或是股东权益放在公司营运的首要考量。毕竟一家公开交易的公司，任何一举一动都会影响股价。另外，推特也不会受到投资人的压力。马斯克将有机会形塑这个推特未来的方向。那最后，就像刚才马斯克他所说到，在公开信里面所讲到的，推特有潜力成为全球民主自由的这个平台。假设今天推特的功能有些改变，就是可能是自由言论有所帮助，但是可能会让他们赚比较少的钱，那或是让原本的股东不开心，这个时候他们就不会有这样的压力，他们可以朝着这个马斯克希望这个公司前进的方向而前进。这个到底是优点还是缺点都目前来讲都比较难说。
那我们就来谈一谈马斯克想要把推特变成一个什么样的一个平台哈。其实像推特这样的一个社媒一直是处在有关言论自由的各种争议的这个漩涡中心哈。有些人认为推特应该在言论监管上做得更多，以此来阻止虚假信息和一些危害性言论的传播，或者是打击威权政府借助社媒来进行政治宣传等等。但是也有人认为推特如果这么做，它就伤害了言论自由。当然对于言论自由的边界到底在哪里，有没有绝对的自由等等，也有很多的争议。另外这个规则的制定权应该在社媒的手里面，还是政府的手里面，还是国会的手里面哈，这一点也是有争议的。那面对这么多的争议，您觉得马斯克会将推特带向什么样的方向呢？
是的，过去几年特别是很多选举啊还有疫情的新闻里面，把社群媒体从一个过去被认为就是一个被动提供讨论的一个平台推到这个立法规范的这个镁光灯下面。那很多人认为这些社群媒体已经不是被动的提供一个平台，因为他们的运算机制会造成同温层效应，也造成一些假信息或是仇恨言论在短时间传播，所以需要这个监管和管制。那这些机制呢，现在是目前这个脸书在受到立法单位的一些规范的地方。那随着这些立法单位的规范，脸书现在有很多机制，包括这个电脑学习机械学习的电脑过滤过程，还有很多人工移除。但与此同时，很多人认为这个社媒就像是你说应该是各抒己见，然后有一个公开的平台来辩论和达成共识，这个就比较偏向这个马斯克和这个推特的这个立场。那马斯克他希望能够把推特更带向一个完全公开的平台，他的这个理论基础是任何的错误信息和言论在公开的辩论和论证下面是站不住脚的。所以我们可以预期马斯克他会把这些这个带向这个更自由的这个光谱的这另外一端，或是更去管制的一个情况。
但是这件事情会不会是一件想起来容易做起来难的事情？就是说当马斯克真正的成为了推特的掌舵人之后，他会不会发现自己还是受到很多的制约？
的确是一些我们看到一些就是美国的一些创业家，他们的精神和个性，比如说像是马斯克，或是之前苹果的老板那个贾伯斯，就是他们对于一些事情会相当的执着啊。那很多人会称他们是 visionary， 就是真知灼见者。所以不管是特斯拉汽车啊，或 SpaceX 太空公司，还有他一些产品啊，我们都可以看到他对一些产品的执着，对于这些消费产品啊，这些这个高品质的要求。那这个对于这个啊，他在一些这个品质要求上是不容许任何的妥协和退让。这样的执着或许在消费者产品里面会让消费者愿意掏腰包来买这些产品，但是社群媒体毕竟和这个消费者产品是不同的。社群媒体之所以叫做social media， 就社群这两个字呢，就表示一个是一个众人的集合体。一个社群媒体的运作方式必须要考虑到各方面的使用者的一个考量。那我们现在看到，我认为目前就是董事会和员工对于它的影响可能不见得大。那但是我认为，这政府监管单位，尤其是现在美国很多立法委员对于社媒的重视和关注，肯定会让马克思在这个许多的实行上受到一些制约。我们现在看到脸书受到的规范，大概就可以略知一二了。
那说到马斯克会受到的影响，这个影响会不会也包括中国政府的影响？我们知道马斯克的另外一个身份是特斯拉的 CEO， 而中国是特斯拉在全球的第二大市场，也是电动车供应链上很重要的一环。那么特斯拉去年所产的车啊，一半都来自上海的工厂，而且这个数量接下来还有可能会翻倍。所以我们看到马斯克这些年也是一直在试图的跟中国政府啊保持一个良好的关系。在马斯克收购了推特的这个消息宣布之后，亚马逊的创始人贝佐斯啊就在推特上说，中国政府是否也因此在这个数字市民广场，也就是推特上，获得了一些影响力？您怎么看待这个问题？
是的，虽然说是在商言商，但是我们从不管是乌俄战争啊，或是后续的影响看啊，其实经济活动和地缘政治是密不可分的。推特在过去是完全不受中国政府管控的。那之前香港的抗议运动之后，推特也注销了许多中国的官方账号，他们也拒绝了这官方媒体啊新华社的广告。那推特也是为世界反政府的声音提供一个可以触及全球的平台。那现在当然是马斯克他的主要旗下公司特斯拉在中国有这么重要的比重，那很多人担心就是这个收购案之后会不会反而让中国政府把他们的控制延伸到社群媒体？那因为中国可以透过特斯拉在中国供应链当成筹码。那目前我认为这个算是不是完全没有不可能，但是在实际经营上，推特其实受到美国政府的管控应该是比较大的。社群媒体虽然是一个自由的平台，但是毕竟总部在美国，还是必须遵守美国的法令和规范。今天如果美国政府要求马斯克继续在推特上必须要注销中国官方的这个媒体账号的话，我想马斯克他是没有办法不遵守的。另外马斯克他在收购的时候宣称希望把这个推特打造成全球一个民主的平台。我想这个更加开放，他对于推特的愿景这一点在意识形态上和中国政府是有相违背的。
您刚才提到了美国政府对于美国的社媒的一些监管哈，确实我们看到美国政府是和推特这样的一些影响力巨大的社媒之间这么多年有非常多的博弈。那比如说拜登政府就多次的敦促国会来修改230的条款，并且对这些大的社媒进行反垄断的调查。但是刚才你也提到了马斯克这个人，他的行事有他的风格，而且他跟拜登政府的很多的政治的理念好像也不尽相同。所以您觉得这个马斯克在掌管了推特啊，会改变这场博弈的格局吗？
我目前认为应该不会有太大的影响。首先是推特在社群媒体的声量上面，其实是前十名都排不上。在每个月活跃的用户的排名里面，推特每个月差不多有4.4亿用户，那排名是在15名，甚至比一个这个图文分享的这个社群软体 Pinterest 用户还要少。那这个排名里面，脸书还是最多的，平均每个月将近有30亿用户，那大概是推特的7倍，所以就影响力和声量上来讲都不是最大的。所以以这样子角度来看的话，变成私人经营的推特公司对于美国政府对于这些限制应该不会有太大的影响。另外我想美国虽然是资本主义的社会，大家如果对美国立国精神有所了解的话，就知道美国任何组织的权力都是有另一股制衡的力量。即使在商业界里面，这个联邦贸易委员会 FTC 是制定和管理这些公司的联邦机构，那再加上目前很多的这个参议员和众议员要求这些社群媒体到国会山庄报告啊，再加强他们的一些监管的一些机制。因此不管马斯克有什么天马行空的改革和愿景，都必须在这些规范以内。所以我认为近期内或许不会有太大的改变。
我们大概还有30秒的时间，您觉得拜登政府现在所提出的对于这些大的科技公司的这样的反垄断的调查，会出现一个什么样的结果？
我觉得就是拜登政府他们当然是一个比较这个大政府的一个论点，来认为说很多事情需要，尤其在目前很多地缘政治的考量之下，需要这些公司科技公司必须要有他们的一个战略性的考量。那我想这个目前这些公司也是站在一个比较为难的地点，但是我想这个乌俄战争，就像我刚才说，乌俄战争如果交给世界人的一课的话，就是经济和地缘政治是密不可分的。那所以我就认为这些公司应该也会在一些这种利益和这个政治，还有这些这个全美利益政治的考量之下做一个权衡的。
好的，谢谢廖启宏博士今天带给我们的分析。嘉宾在节目中发表的是个人观点，并不代表美国之音。美国国务院负责阿富汗妇女、女童和人权事务的特使李娜·阿米里星期一接受美国之音的专访，她表示美国强烈谴责斋月期间发生在阿富汗针对清真寺与学校的爆炸事件。她还说塔利班禁止6年级以上女童接受教育背弃承诺，令人无法接受，塔利班应被严厉追责。下面是美国之音驻国务院记者站主任张荣香的报道。
阿富汗从4月开始进入斋月，但是近来频繁发生爆炸事件。针对清真寺以及学校的袭击事件，显示安全形势恶化。对此，美国国务院高级官员说，美国非常担忧阿富汗弱势群体的状况。
The Taliban recognize that this is an issue that we take very seriously. We are particularly concerned about the situation of vulnerable populations, ethnic and religious groups that have been under increasing attack.
美国去年8月从阿富汗撤军之后，在塔利班的统治之下，阿富汗女性目前面临越来越沉重的压迫。今年3月23号。阿富汗塔利班当局背弃之前的承诺，宣布禁止女童6年级以上的教育。
This is a decision that has been made from the top, and with it's coming directly from the Taliban, and there's no excuse for it. It's unacceptable. It puts Afghanistan in a reverse position.
美国特使阿米里告诉美国之音，上个月在中国举办的阿富汗邻国外长会议期间，意味着对于塔利班背弃义务感到震惊，认为此举无法实现国际社会的期望。以上是美国之音驻国务院记者站主任张荣香的采访报道。
当今真相为重，掌握全球脉动，只要点击 VOA Plus， 手指移动信息即来，追踪政治动向，体验真实生活，世界各地的声音随时随地轻松获取。现在就下载 VOA Plus 应用程序 ，VOA Plus。
欢迎继续收看《美国观察》。福特公司的 F-150 皮卡是美国最畅销的一款车，也是美国汽车文化、美国中产阶级生活方式的象征。因此，这款车从燃油车变为电动车，标志着整个汽车行业的转型，具有划时代的意义。就连美国总统拜登也亲自为它站台。而推动这一变革的首席工程师是一位华裔女性张琳达。日前，她在纽约车展上接受了我的专访，谈及电动车的进步以及美中在电动车领域的竞争。
Thank you very much, Linda, for sitting with me today. I was looking at you introducing all the great features of F-150 Lightning. I can tell you must be very proud of it. But if you have to name a few, what are you most proud of about this electric version of America's favorite pickup truck?
Well, yeah, exactly. It's America's favorite truck, so we have a very high bar, and it's important for us to make sure we deliver on that promise that F-150 has with durability and capability, and making sure that we deliver that built Ford tough promise. So that's the first thing I'm very proud of for the truck, is that it does that. But secondly, it's also in a way, an AM solution for our customer. It does everything that a gas truck would do, like towing and hauling with up to 10,000 pounds of towing and 2,000 pounds of payload. But in addition to that, it's elevated with electrification features that only electrification can bring. So, for example, we have a great feature in this truck that leverages the battery that's being used, not just for propulsion, but also as electricity for our customers with ProPower on board to give them that functionality of using this as a generator on wheels, or in a home situation, if you have power outage, like many times homes do with storms, this truck provides that backup power for the home autonomously in a way. So that's another really wonderful feature that I love about this product. And I think my favorite is really the Mega Power Frunk, which is our front trunk. Because you don't have an engine, you have all that wonderful space. And with it, it gives our customers the best of both worlds.
Ford F-Series is not only the best-selling vehicle line in the States for decades, but also an icon of American culture. So it's going electric is quite symbolic. How do you see the significance and what drives Ford to take such a bold step towards an electric future?
That's a great question. And I think that goes hand in hand with our Ford strategy. Electrification is super important for us, and we have a very dedicated business toward really expanding electrification. By 2030, we're planning to have 50% of our vehicles be electric. So it was very important for us to make sure that we hit iconic vehicles with electrification. F-150, like you said, best-selling vehicle in North America for 45 years. It's a big position and big shoes to fill in a way for this truck to build off of, and we wanted to be able to do that so that we can showcase to our customers that these are brands that they can trust and nameplates that they can trust and know that they're going to get really great products.
And let them know this is the future, right? This
yes.
is a very important transition of the whole auto industry in the States, and also critical to President Biden's efforts to fight climate change and to embrace a new energy economy. That's why he visited a Ford plant in Michigan. I remember after a test drive of F-150 Lightning, he said, this sucker is quick. So he
yes.
must be very impressed by your work.
Yes, he came to visit us at the plant, and I got a chance to show him the vehicle as well as attend the test track event. And he was very happy with our progress. And I think part of it is because we are building on such a great foundation for a product that customers can adopt and that they can feel comfortable adopting. And that transition, that will help that transition that you just mentioned from a product perspective. And then as this progresses, we'll also have, you know, the infrastructure that goes with it. So those are both really important pieces of getting to, from a climate sustainability perspective.
Indeed. But it can be a lot harder to impress the F-150 loyalists, to convince them switch from gas, because, you know, they like so much about the masculinity of gas-powered pickup trucks. They like the sound of the engine, which shows strength. They like, the feeling of toughness when off-roading. So how could you convince them that the electric version is just as good, if not better, than the gas version they are used to?
Yeah, you definitely have to convince them that it's better. And that's really what we built this truck on. You talk about the performance of the vehicle. The EVs offer great performance. This vehicle with standard dual motors providing 4x4 all the time really it is part of what's behind the instant torque of 775 foot-pounds of that instant torque. That is super important for the acceleration and just the ability for it to go. Couple that with our extended range battery, and it's 563 horsepower of performance, getting you 0 to 60 in mid 4 seconds. I think that's one of the things that will definitely help that transition, is that ride and drive and that experience in the vehicle for our truck. It's interesting because I've met a lot of people that have worked on the truck that are very much hardcore gas F-150 customers or truck customers in general, and they'll say, oh, I'm never going to switch. I love my truck. They've gotten in this truck and they have orders, and some of them even have their truck coming to them very soon. So I think, you know, the experience with the truck will really change their hearts and minds in a way.
But you're also facing a lot of competitors. How would you convince the consumers to go with F-150 Lightning instead of, let's say, Tesla's Cybertruck?
Well, I think one of the keys is we're here with the truck, and there's nobody out there right now that's offering a full-size pickup at especially this price, and our volumes in a way, right? There's some niche products out there, and there's some niche products out there with, you know, very high price tags. And then in addition to that, there's some concepts, but we haven't seen those out yet. So I think we're in a really good position of being able to offer this truck to those that want it now or very soon.
So what are the major technology bottlenecks that are stalling the EV revolution?
Well, I think some of it is just the adoption, right? The need for the adoption and meeting that customer need. And I think some of it is also the familiarity with the product. I don't think from a technology perspective that there's anything necessarily holding this back. I think it's on the right path. But a lot of it will come with a lot of the growth in EVs will come with infrastructure and also come with customer demand.
On the core EV technology front, is China getting ahead of the U.S. right now?
I don't think so. I think there's a lot of really great technologies here, and we can see that there's a lot of good progression here in terms of the product. So it is a global world right now, and I'm sure we'll see what's going to happen in the future.
Do you think the supply chain disruption experienced by American auto industry is making it more complicated?
We have a really great team that manages supply chain for us and ensures that we're getting the parts that we need to be able to build parts, the vehicles. I mean, supply shortage is definitely something that is out there that's a global concern right now, but the Ford team is doing a great job in terms of managing it and making sure that it's not impacting as much as in certain areas.
You came from China to the States when you were 8 years old,
and
you are now the chief engineer of F-150 in Ford. That's quite an achievement. You went a long way. But as an Asian female, have you ever felt like you have to deal with or overcome some sort of stereotype when climbing the career ladder in a male-dominated industry?
You know, Ford has been a great company for me to work at, and I personally have not experienced that. Even in school, I had a lot of really great friends that were males and females, and I tried to not think of myself in terms of just being a female or just being, you know, any category per se. But the fact that, you know, we're working with a great team of very diverse team members that bring a really great truck together, and our sole focus is really on making a great product and making sure that we have a great team environment where everybody's contributions are taken very seriously, and that diversity in thought is something that we actually value very much, because I think that helps us a lot with producing a truck that makes a great product for different customers with different needs.
好，以上就是今天美国观察的全部内容，感谢您的收看，再见。